Hello, I'm Thomas Davis. I'm the minister of Carloway Free Church on the Isle of Lewis in the northwest of Scotland.
And I'm Anne McDonald, the student and young adult worker from Bon Accord Free Church in Aberdeen.
And I'm Andy Longway, minister of London City Presbyterian Church in the heart of our nation's capital. And welcome to the Jesus Today podcast.
Thank you so much for connecting with us again. It's so good to hear from you. We've loved hearing from you since our last episode. And a reminder to you all that you can get in touch with us through social media. You can look for us on X at Jesus Today Pod. And you can also email us at hello@jesustodaypodcast.com. And we're really grateful to all of you for supporting us, for encouraging us, and for keeping in touch with us. So thank you very, very much for being on this journey as we follow Jesus Today together.
Well, Thomas and Anne, we got a request from one of our listeners, a dear friend of mine, Murdo Murchison, shout out to Murdo, to discuss marriage. And I was racking my brain to think of a couple who we could invite on the show, who have been married a long time, who love each other just in the days that, like, that they met when they were romancing. A couple who've had a huge impact in my life, Mark and Lisa Randall. So let me just ask them to introduce themselves. Mark and Lisa, you are in Kentucky. Welcome to the Jesus Today podcast. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourselves?
Well, thank you, Andy. It's good to be with you all. And this is an honor for us here in Kentucky. Just want your listeners to know that Lisa and I are big, big, big fans of the Longways, and they have been dear friends. We think it's been 10 years. Andy was still in seminary when we met, and my son Keaton has been to Scotland a couple of times, been to London, and we're just really, really grateful for our friendship with you and all of that. So what else am I saying?
Introduce us.
I am a pastor at Tate's Creek Presbyterian Church in Lexington, Kentucky. Lisa and I have been married almost 30 years. We have a 26-year-old daughter, and she and her husband have a one-year-old son, so we're also grandparents. Wow. Then we have a 22-year-old daughter and a 19-year-old son. And that's us.
Fantastic.
What do you have?
Oh, other than being a mom forever, I now am a part-time librarian.
Cool.
And I take care of our grandson quite a bit as well. And still take care of Mark.
Which one's harder, grandson? Mark?
You know, it depends on the day, Andy. It really does.
Well, we'll save the story for later or whenever you want to ask. But one time when Andy was in the States, we were in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and stayed at this little cabin that we just all loved. And Lisa sent us with a flank steak that was marinated all day. We got down there, I did a charcoal grill, and Andy just thought it was great. So there's become a tradition that whenever he's in the States, we have a flank steak. It's happened two or three or four times since then. And then when we have been in London, we tried to recreate it. It hasn't quite been the same, but we were still working on it. But the biggest fight Lisa and I have been in maybe ever.
Definitely recently, as in like last week.
Yeah, I mean, it was either 2 weeks ago or last week. It had to do with flank steak.
No
so
way.
Andy, it is very providential that we are talking marriage.
So I told Mark, I said, clearly this podcast is causing Satan to attack us.
Yeah.
Because we got in a terrible fight, and I almost pulled the plug and was like, I have nothing to say. All because of flank steak, Andy.
Well, let's keep that story because I want to entice
you for later.
Yeah. Well, you've really wet our appetite, and I'm sure our listeners can't wait to hear that story. Well, before we get talking how we as followers of Jesus live out our lives in the context of marriage, we're going to kick off the podcast with our favorite game, He's Right, She's Wrong. And today, since we've got Americans on, you know, one of the big divides between Britain and America, well, it's chocolate. You know, Hershey's chocolate, Cadbury's chocolate, which is better. But let's just go around and try and get, what's your favorite chocolate in this call? And why don't we kick off with our Americans? Mark and Lisa, tell us your favorite brand of chocolate, favorite kind of chocolate, and then we'll go to Anne and Thomas.
Can you go first?
You can. You know yours.
I'm going to stick with Hershey as the manufacturer. So that, but then the Reese cup. I think that is chocolate perfected with chocolate and peanut butter. So that's going to be number one. With a close second, any dark chocolate that has kind of a sea salt component to it, I like that too. But number one, it's going to be the Reese cup.
Interesting.
Well, I'm with you with the Reese's cup, apart from the chocolate on the Reese's cup. The middle is great, but the chocolate's like plastic, so I'm sorry. If you can find one that's made with good quality chocolate, I'd be completely with you. What about you, Lisa?
You know, I like all kinds of chocolate, but I think I like mint chocolate. So anything that you can do a peppermint or a thin mint or a York peppermint patty. I like the combination of the crisp, cool mint with the dark chocolate.
Nice. Nice. Mm-hmm. I quite like mint. I think I'm more with you, Lisa, than I am with Mark. Reese's, not sure. Not sure about that at all. And, you know, there are lots of ways in which America has done impressive things. You know, Apple, Google, all that kind of stuff.
Democracy.
But I mean, yeah, maybe you got that right, but you're rubbish at chocolate. Sorry, but just chocolate's just not at the same level at all. And thankfully, Europe just kept focus on the things that matter, like chocolate, whilst you were worrying about, you know, freedom and democracy and all that kind of stuff. And I have to say, I love European chocolate. So I'm actually maybe going to go slightly to one side there. I'm not even going to defend British chocolate. I love European chocolate. So Toblerone is the number one chocolate. Just
wow.
Fantastic. Yep. Fantastic. Mm. And it's so cool because it's triangular. I mean, that's just very cool as well. So love Toblerone. Love Milka chocolate. Really good. I like a Kinder Egg. You guys, Mark and Lisa might not even know what these things are, but it's that's an Italian company. So all of that's really good. So I like continental chocolate, but Toblerone is definitely it's the mountaintop of a chocolate.
Well, I would just like to say I'm willing to be proven wrong.
Okay. So
I'm there. I'll bring more Reese's.
I'm with you on the European chocolate, definitely. I've just discovered my new favorite chocolate, actually. A recent discovery, Montezuma's black cherry chocolate. Have you come across this, anyone? No. So good. Andy, you do not look impressed.
It's the same category as Marmite. What is that? Disgusting.
Yeah, I feel I'm developing a reputation for slightly
black
out there.
Cherry chocolate, interesting.
But yeah, black cherry chocolate was really good. But I dark chocolate, good quality dark chocolate, not the Reese's stuff.
Wow. What about you, Andy?
Well, Toblerone is a visit to the dentist, Thomas. That's just like rock hard. Like, who enjoys Toblerone? No way, off the list. Anne is just 2 weeks in a row, you know, or three, like, I think that was the second last episode. Like, that sounds in the same category as Marmite. No, thank you. I'm just going to stick with Cadbury's milk chocolate, like a dairy milk, you know. To me, that's the hype. You cannot beat a dairy milk.
This is boring.
Well, because it's Easter season, I will tell you, Andy, Cadbury does the eggs. And eat the egg, and it has the white with the yellow cream in it.
Yes.
Cadbury eggs.
Mm. Yes.
And the miniature ones are like my favorite little like snack that I hide and eat the little miniature. I do love those.
They Lisa, you've redeemed yourself. Excellent choice.
The mini Cadbury eggs.
Well, if I shouldn't change the subject, I won't. But I do have another story to prove just how off Andy Longley. One time when he was in the States, I took him to get the greatest hamburger America ever made. And we are known for our hamburgers, but there's one little area in America called the Crystal Burgers. And I was like, they're really small, so you can get 3 or 4 or 5 of them. So Andy ordered them. He had one bite and he threw the rest of them away. Oh. So they were
disgusting.
I think you used the word rubbish.
Yeah, rubbish was the word.
Oh, wow. Brilliant.
So a man that can't appreciate Crystal Hamburger, he's not going to know chocolate. Yeah.
Well, listen, Thomas, you're visiting the States for the first time next month, is it?
I am going there next month, yes, yeah.
So you got try look for crystals. Try it, Thomas. I'm sure you'll love it. I'm sure. Well, let's leave it to our listeners. We've got listeners in America. We would love to hear what's your views on the chocolate preferences of Mark, Lisa, Thomas, Anne, and myself. I'm sure you've all got good taste, beautiful palate, Cadbury's, Dairy Milk, all the way. We look forward to hearing you. Your opinions, your vote. We can't wait. Well, let's talk about our subject. So, as I said, Mark and Lisa have been our dear friends of mine and Marina's, and had a huge impact on us, just as we've been able to share life with them and watch them follow Jesus as in the context of their marriage. And so, Mark and Lisa, we're thrilled to have you. Why don't you just begin by telling us how you met? And in fact, it might be even worthwhile hearing how you came to know Jesus as well. So that we can ground our conversation with Jesus and your marriage.
So I was raised in a Bible believing church. My parents were professed believers, so I really don't remember ever not being part of God's local church. It was a Baptist tradition I grew up in, so there was kind of an emphasis on a time and a place that I would remember. So when I was in the third grade, just at a church service, our tradition there was you kind of walk forward, talk to the minister, that sort of thing. But I didn't quite do that, but I told my dad I wanted to. Mm. And my dad, the following Sunday, took me to meet with the pastor, and he led me through like a prayer to ask Jesus into my heart, that sort of thing. And that's not my preference of ministry now, but I think the Lord really did convert me at that time. So I'm very grateful for my Baptist background and what the Lord is using the Baptist church throughout the world now. Mm-hmm. So I grew up in the church. I would say it was a little bit more of a kind of fundamentalist type approach of following Jesus meant behavior modification, and you want to behave so that other people would see Jesus in you, that sort of thing. When I went to university, when I was at College, University of Tennessee, I got involved with Campus Crusade for Christ. And I would say that was the first time I saw people who genuinely just loved the Lord and wanted to know more about him. And there was nothing expected other than they were just falling more in love with Christ. And I didn't know that's what I saw in them, but that is exactly what I saw in them. Mm-hmm. And truthfully, that was where I was exposed to like expository preaching, where we had a guy who would just go through paragraphs of the Bible. And then I would go home and read the same paragraphs and kind of make notes and pray. And that it really, my home church may have done that. I just wasn't paying attention to them. But in college, I was. So That's how I came to know the Lord. When Lisa, so through this campus ministry, I was at Tennessee. After my fourth year, I had another semester to go. A lot of emphasis was placed upon going on these things called summer project, like a summer mission trip.
Yeah.
And I wanted to do that before I graduated. So there was a couple of us from Tennessee that went on this trip, and it was like 10 or 11 weeks. It was all summer. So we went to a little place in New Hampshire, and it was with college students from all over America. And I only knew one other person. And it was there that Lisa was part of that group too. She was with a larger group in Kentucky. They were there, and That's where we met, and before the summer was over, we had already picked out a wedding date. Wow. And we had never met each other's parents or been to each other's home or anything like that. So when we met, it did kind of go really fast.
I had similar, not exactly, story with Mark. I did grow up in the church. My parents divorced when I was 9, mm-hmm. and that impacted me quite a bit. So when I came to college, we were a part of what was Campus Crusade for Christ, which is now called CRU. I got involved with that as my first year in university and went to one of their conferences over Christmas and really heard the gospel explained like I had never heard it. And I really think that is where I became a believer, because I finally was confessing sin and experiencing forgiveness and really started walking with the Lord at that time. And so then it was about 3.5 years later that I met Mark, and it was through the same organization on that mission trip. But it was really funny because of my background, I had pretty much always had a boyfriend. That's just what I did from like kindergarten all through that summer. And I went that summer with a boyfriend, and my goal was to not meet anyone else on that summer trip. And my best friend and I went together, and her goal was to meet her husband. Well, to this day, she did not meet her husband on that trip, and I did. And so it's just kind of, God was like, you think you're so funny, Lisa. You're going to tell me when you're not going to meet someone and when you are going to meet someone. And so sure enough, when I finally was not looking and didn't pursue, the Lord plopped Mark right down into my life. Wow. So that's kind of how we both knew so quickly, oh, wow, this is something different than we've experienced before. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. And that summer, in a way, I mean, not that it was a fairy tale, like we had to deal with some hard stuff, but we didn't have any pressures from being at home. So I think just the way the Lord orchestrated that was when we got to know each other and became best friends, we were just able to talk and spend a lot of time together without dealing with work or issues or anything like that. Mm. And that
it's kind of an incubator for a relationship.
Yeah. It was for us, for sure. And I think the Lord blessed that. Mm.
That's amazing. And you know, I think what you said there about how the Lord is one step ahead of you in these things and sometimes surprising you is just an amazing testimony to how God works in every part of our lives and in our relationships and as he leads us towards marriage. But I'd love to ask you about those early years. You know, obviously you met quite quickly and it didn't take long to know that you wanted to be married, to spend your lives together. But in so many ways, the get-to-knowing process really does only begin once you are married. So yes, we do a lot to get to know each other before we get married, but there's still so much that is still to be learned as we begin life together as husband and wife. So I'd love to just hear a wee bit. Tell me a wee bit about those early years. Joys, sorrows, highs, lows, lessons learned. Just any thoughts about that would be great to hear.
Well, that's a great question. What comes to my mind is in those first early years when we lived in the apartment, which ironically is very close to us right now, we joined a church. It's not the church where we are now. And we were in a little Sunday school class that had other couples about our age who had been married about the same length of time. Mm. And even though we were really just with them once a week, there was something really powerful about that we had other people in our stage of life who also were young and married and didn't really know what they were doing. And I just remember that really being encouraging. And we didn't stay at the church that long, 2 or 3 years maybe, but it was kind of pivotal at that time that I think if we hadn't been in church, the first few years would have been much different than what they were. That it was both, we would go to a worship service and then to a community-rich Sunday school class that had good teaching and conversation and fellowship. And I think that kind of shaped us a lot. The teacher and his wife were just great. And again, it's kind of like classic stuff in ministry. I don't remember anything they taught. But I just remember them and their presence and their marriage, and they had us in their home. And I don't know, that's what came to my mind, thinking about the first few years.
I think a lot of times people talk about when you're first married, it's that first year that's so hard as you're trying to figure each other nuances out. For Mark and I, it was actually for us, I feel like it was year two.
Okay.
Year one, we both were working first jobs, different hours, different days. and we really didn't have a lot of time that we were together because of our schedules. And it's like he was off on a Tuesday, I was off on Saturday and Sunday. Mm-hmm. And so we'd only have from like 8 o'clock at night on most days until I would go to work in the morning at 7. And so the first year is just like lots of dating, lots of fun. This is just what we're doing. We're working and being married. And then the second year is when we actually came on staff with Campus Crusade. And we went from hardly seeing each other to being together 24/7, 7 days a week, trying to put together a support team and ministry and minister out of hardly anything. And that was
like COVID long before COVID. Yes. We were together all the time.
Yes, it was. That's what it was. And so I felt like that was harder because we had been married and yet we were just now figuring out, oh, you're doing this and it's bothering me, or, oh, I didn't know that about you. So year two for me was harder, but the newlywed group that we were with, it was so nice to go through that season of life and realize, oh, other people are experiencing the same thing, or this is normal. And to be able to walk away and go, oh, it's okay if you are upset about this, as long as you deal with this. And so I think it was great for all of us in it together to realize none of us know what we're doing.
Yeah.
None of us are doing it all right or all wrong, but we're just keep moving forward.
Yeah.
And having those Sunday school teachers that had been married that kind of modeled and listened was really great.
Yeah, I think that's such a helpful point to remember, because sometimes it's easy in those early years of marriage to think that the only thing that you need is each other. And you can almost look to think, oh, if we just get married and we can just be together, that is going to complete us and we don't really need anybody else. But yet we really do need others in terms of guiding and supporting us. I remember my wife's sister and her husband are a little bit older than us, married a few years ahead of us. And they were so helpful because they were just a wee bit ahead of us.
And just on that, I was just wondering if you were to speak to Mark and Lisa just met at that camp, what would your advice be to that young couple? And in my job with students, I quite often do marriage prep or marriage preparation. What would you recommend for that stage right before marriage? Like what kind of things do you think are really important to cover? Or do you know any good resources? Or
gosh, that's another great question. If we could go back and talk to ourselves. I have some thoughts.
You can go, and then I've got a couple things.
I think that going slow is okay. That the Lord typically moves slowly in our lives. In His sanctification of us is typically a slow, lifelong process. I think I would go back and tell myself to set a tone, an ethos in our home of joy and happiness. And because I was unsure what I was doing with my work and career, I feel like that, the uncertainty of that, set an undertone of anxiety for everyone. And now, 30 years later, I can see how the Lord was at work in all of those things. And I wish I could have just been able to kind of lean into that and trust that there's a good plan and the Lord is doing good things. And I can wait. I can fulfill my duties, responsibilities, and have goals and desires, and know that the Lord's at work along the way. I think that's what I would say.
I think if I could go back,
this what is, would you want me to say?
No. Mine's more me than it is you. It's more, and this is what I tell young couples, having had a daughter that was just married in 2020, and then a lot of her friends, and now our second daughter has friends getting married. I try to make sure and tell them, first of all, dating is fun. To me, engagement is hard because you're moving towards marriage, but you're not married. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden you're having to make all of these big life decisions and plan and budget and deal with a lot of things that you were not having to deal with before you were engaged. And I think it creates a lot of friction. Mm-hmm. And I say, just keep dating. If there's a couple of times that you need to just set aside, we are not going to do anything that has to do with the wedding, but we're going to go out or we're going to plan something that has nothing to do mm-hmm. with the wedding's day. It's just us and working on our relationship. And then that just because it's hard doesn't mean it's wrong. I don't know many people that love engagement. I think part of it is it gets you ready. So once you're there on the day, you can actually enjoy it and it's over. It's like we made it to the finish line. Then you can actually enjoy your marriage because all of that's behind you.
Anne, I'd love to ask you the same question. I'd love to ask you a question back to you. What would you say to yourself? 17 years ago? I can't remember what you said, how long you were married.
17 years ago. I should have thought that for myself as well. I think what I found in doing marriage prep with some of our students is just really getting, because you're right, I think dating's quite hard as well. It's fun, but it's quite hard. And engagement's really hard. So I think what's so weird about dating is you don't have any of it in the Bible. It's just not a concept that's in the Bible at all. What I always think I would have loved to have had a clearer view of what marriage actually looks like as a Christian marriage and have a really good understanding of that picture we have in Ephesians 5 and the kind of beauty of the reciprocity of that relationship, but the different roles, but the beauty of the partnership together and that focus on God's word and sanctification, the purpose of marriage being sanctification, and just having a really clear idea of God, it being a covenant, like God's covenant love and the beauty of the security of that. So just having a really clear vision of the beauty of marriage. And then I think that would have helped with the pre-marriage bit, having a much clearer way of making wiser decisions about that. What about resources? Do you guys know of any good resources for marriage prep or anything that you would recommend? I'm always on the lookout.
Yeah, I thought about that. I mean, there are some good books, of course, and there will always be good marriage books. And honestly, I don't know any of them that I haven't benefited from. Certainly, Tim Keller's Meaning of Marriage is great. Brian Chappell's, I think it's called Each for the Other. It's really good. But all of those in our kind of circles are good. But
what are the older ones from the 80s?
I'm trying to think. It's by a guy named Gary Smalley. I think it was written in the 70s, but it was called like if
there was
only he knew and then if only she knew. So it's like, sort of thing. But truthfully, what has helped us the most would be relationships with older people and mentors. And so, I mean, books and materials are great. People that you can talk to and share with and have them pray for you. Like that's the best. But, the other one that did benefit us a lot, and it's still there and we need to return, but it's called Family Life Today. Or is that the show?
Weekends to Remember.
Weekends to Remember, yeah.
They do a marriage conference, and here it's a weekend. It's like a Friday night through Sunday afternoon. And you can go as engaged couples, newly married for so many years, on the brink of divorce, separated, or celebrating, wherever you are in your life. And I think we've done 5 of them. We did one as engaged, one at a year, and then just a couple sprinkled throughout. And every single time we do one, we're just at such a different stage in life, whether it's with children or what we're facing, that it really gives you a chance to focus in on your marriage. And the greatest thing they taught us at that marriage conference was to look at your spouse and to say, you are not my enemy. So no matter what it is that you are going through or what you're fighting about,
we're supposed to look into each other's eyes.
You are not my enemy.
There is an enemy. It's not you.
And it's not each other. And to always remember that. But family life, anything with them.
Yeah, family life's the name of the ministry. The other thing that they shared, and I think it was when we were engaged, but it was just so good for us. Because when we met and dated, everything was so easy. Then when we were engaged, it was so hard. But I just remember at that time, I don't remember who the speaker was, but it was like all relationships move apart. They all relationships move apart. So there must be some intentionality that you move toward each other or you'll keep moving apart. Mm-hmm. And I have to think about that with the gospel of the Lord gives us means of grace that he's always moving toward us.
Yeah.
If we don't receive those, then we are, he won't abandon us, but the intimacy is affected if we are not participants. And to an extent, there's a comparison there with marriage that the more that we talk, the more that we listen, the more that we pray together, pray for each other, then it helps. Yeah. As opposed to ignoring all of those things, we drift apart.
That's so interesting, and I think so important to recognize that, you know, any relationship, whether it's the relationship we have with the Lord or with one another or even with our church family, it does take effort, and it does take that right approach to being disciplined in a healthy way to keep cultivating good habits and avoiding difficult ones. One of the things I'd love to ask you about is what is something that I think is a big difference between definitely Scottish people and Americans in regard to marriage. There's a kind of fairly sort of well-known principle in ministry settings that I'm in and amongst colleagues, whereby people will always say that in Scotland, maybe in Britain, maybe I don't know if it's just in Presbyterian settings or in others, but the first that you'll hear about a marriage that's struggling is when it's beyond repair. And that's something that I would say is definitely true. I think that we have this huge pressure in our culture, in our marriages, in lots of ways, but also in our marriages, to always put on this front. Everything is fine. Don't look too closely. Whereas one of the things I admire so much about you both and the wider culture and approach to these things in the American church is that there's much more openness and honesty and readiness to talk and share about these things. And I guess the question I would love to ask is, how can that honesty be cultivated? How is it that you maybe feel comfortable talking about things in a way that Scottish people wouldn't? Or do you have just any wider thoughts about that whole idea of being ready to be open about our marriages for both, you know, everything that's going well, but also maybe things that we're finding difficult?
I'll say something as you asked that question, Thomas, that came to my mind is that 5 or 6 years ago at our church during the women's Bible study time, there was a day of sharing or they asked one person just to share a testimony before they got into Bible study. And this person just shared a couple of hard things that she was going through and that her family was going through. It wasn't crazy, but it was honest and it was sincere and how she was trusting the Lord. That created a bit of a snowball effect that provided an ethos where other people could share. And you could draw a direct line from that time to someone else. I know that she got out of a marriage that she had biblical grounds to get out of because this person shared one thing. She felt the freedom to open up and share, and that helped. So I think in some ways in our churches, either from the pulpit or just that we can share real life. I don't know if pulpit is exactly the right place, but just that we can be honest about our failures and our sins and seek the Lord's grace. And so I think we can provide an ethos where that happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would echo exactly that. I'm a part of our women's Bible study and lead a group, and with lack of, I don't want to always throw Mark and I under the bus, but sometimes I like to provide an example of a time that we did not handle a situation well, or we were fighting, or I needed prayer for something. So therefore, we're not held on this pedestal, but they realize, oh, they have struggles and issues, and they're dealing with things. And I feel like honesty breeds more honesty.
Yeah.
And so therefore, when they hear somebody being honest, they're more likely to be honest and ask for prayer or ask to meet or ask to talk. And I feel like that's gone a really long way. Mm-hmm. And we're a part of community groups or parish groups or life groups. And in those groups, when you share your honest prayer request, one, you're vulnerable and asking that you need help. But two, when people pray for you and then they can ask you about it, it gives them faith in their prayers, because when they see God work, it's, oh, I want to pray more because I'm seeing what he's doing in your life. Mm-hmm. And then you want to share what God's doing in your life. And so I do feel like it's a reciprocal cycle effect that you have to be vulnerable to do it.
I've been waiting the whole podcast to ask, can you tell us the flank state story?
Well, funny, because that was the story.
There was an example where you're vulnerable 2 weeks ago.
When is a time that you have not handled an issue well? And I've been studying Matthew, and I think it was maybe when Peter was so boastful and that, oh, not me, I would never do that. And it was an application question, and no one in my group, there was silence. And I was like, well, I'll just tell y'all, we had a little episode this week. And I'll let Mark share his side, and then I'll share
Was it a Tuesday night or Wednesday night? It was during the week.
And, I think it was a Wednesday night.
And typically...
It was Wednesday night, because Keaton went to RUF.
Yeah, it was a Wednesday night, and which was a little weird. We typically wouldn't have that meal on a week. Day, but we did. And so the thing is, it's a particular cut of meat that is just our favorite. So everyone looks forward to it. Lisa's got a recipe that is just everything about it. It fits us. So Andy, you'll remember this, that when it's finished, we bring it in, it sets for a bit, and then it's time to cut it. And we have an electric knife. This is not the same electric knife we've had for 30 years, but the concept.
It is.
I thought we got a new
one. No, it is.
It's the same one. All right. So, was it a wedding gift?
It was.
It's the same one.
Yes. So that's part of the
we've
problem.
We've had it for 30 years, but the blades go into the little thing, and I couldn't figure out how to do it. And Lisa just doesn't have a category for we've had it for 30 years, and I can't make it. I can't put the thing together.
Because he's done it before.
Well, I've done it. I'm sure I've done it a lot. But the reality is, I just get lucky. And this time, it wasn't working. And Lisa, I think you had kept our grandson all day. So she was kind of tired. She wasn't really in the mood. And I was getting a little frustrated that I couldn't make it work. And basically, she was like, here, let me show you, as I've shown you for 3 decades.
He said, could you come show me how to do this?
Okay.
He asked.
Okay.
Which, on one hand, I think that's a good thing. I'm teaching. But I think after 30 years, Lisa is like, I don't want a teachable husband. I want a husband who actually knows how to teach. And when she showed me,
I was teaching him.
I felt like she kind of went into school teacher mode and I was a student. And at that point, I was like, I don't need a school teacher, something like that. The entire fight was like 20 seconds. But it lasted for 48 hours. Okay. So then that turned into, we won't say our names.
Yeah.
People still
alive. I called him a name that is in his family for someone that maybe might not pay attention or learn how to do something, and you've done it several times, which was not nice. Yep. And then he turned around and responded with another name that was equally not as nice. And
this was childish.
Oh, it was very childish, but we were hungry and we were tired and neither one of us were being patient.
Yeah.
And it just did not go well. And so
there was another piece where you're like, you're raising your voice.
Oh, yeah.
And I
raised his voice again.
I didn't think I was. So I said,
I am not raising my voice.
But again, if we could go back and watch the entire
It would be hilarious. Andy, I wish we could video that to you. Because you would love flank steak even more.
Even more.
And strictly that night.
It was terrible. We did it on
a gas grill because we needed to expedite it. Okay. And it doesn't work on gas. You got to use charcoal. You got to have the smoke. The whole thing works. So
It did not go well.
It was a disaster.
And then the rest of the story is Keaton was going to Reform University Fellowship meeting on campus, and he told us, he goes, I'm going to ask for prayer for my parents. That's a real funny pastor's kid.
Did he really?
Yes, he did. And then Mark had a ball game that he was wanting to watch. So we did not resolve the issue until the next day.
That was on a Wednesday.
And then we actually redeemed. We made the exact same meal again over the weekend to redeem it so that we could, like, okay, we can do this.
But Lisa left that knife out for me. But what happened was our fight last time was so bad, I really didn't pay attention. So I wasn't sure how to do it again. But I was cognitive of the fact of, like, oh my gosh, I still don't know how to do it.
And I can't.
And, but I'm like, there's no way I'm falling into this trap again. So our son Keaton was there, and I'm like, do you know how this works? And Keaton could, he just figures stuff out fast. But then he couldn't either. And Lisa, it was a Saturday.
I had to leave the room. But
she was not mad.
I wasn't mad. I just couldn't believe it was happening again.
And then I was like, oh, okay, I got it. But now I would like to say, I'm pretty sure I've got it figured out. After 30 years, I know.
30 years and two episodes later, we got it.
Well, I was going to suggest you could watch a YouTube video, but then if it's 30 years old, maybe there wouldn't be one for that particular night.
But I don't know if there would be a YouTube video.
It's one of those things that you can tell people things over and over and over again, but until you actually do them yourself, you're not going to get it, which is applicable in all areas of life. Yeah. I could tell him, but until he did it himself and had to see exactly, then it clicked.
Yeah.
And I think the reality is with that knife, like for Thanksgiving or whatever, Lisa always has it set up ready for me. And then I'll come in and do it. Right. But I think it also kind of reveals, man, out of the blue, if you're tired, if you've had a long day, if you're hungry, you could be at your worst moment like that. Yeah. I mean, it's really
that. I mean, I love that you shared that story. I love that you you know, had the honesty and openness to share it. And I think what you just said is so crucial, that it actually teaches so many lessons, that there's just a minor situation, a completely unexpected situation, and also an example of how we can really easily escalate things rather than de-escalate things. And it's just so interesting to think that through.
Mark and Lisa, can I ask three quick questions? I remember, like, there's been many seminal moments in our relationship. I think the last time we were over, Marina and I stayed with you, and Marina was literally so moved just watching you guys wake up early in the morning and do your spiritual disciplines together and apart and reading the scripture. How do you keep Jesus at the center of your marriage over 30 years? So that's one question. Another question is, I've heard you say, Mark, on many occasions, and Thomas alluded to this at the start, that it's only once you get married that you actually start getting to know one another. And Mark, one of your lines is, you've got to be a student of your spouse. Your spouse is deeply interesting. I've heard you say that so many times. We're always learning. What are some good open-ended questions that you could give us, just tips to get to know one another? And then my third question, I'll try and keep this because I know time is going on, but my third question is, you referenced that Smalley book, like Men Are From Mars or whatever, differences between men and women. And I'd love you to speak to, just those differences. And one of the, I've heard Mark use an illustration. I'd love to hear that. But one of the differences I often think is the emotional dynamic in a relationship. And so how do you support, say someone's more emotionally wired or made up, how do you develop, like, being an emotionally supportive spouse if you're not, and just being aware of that? So three, how do you keep Jesus at the center of your marriage? How do you be a student of your spouse? How do you support your spouse in light of the differences of your makeup?
I think for the first one, after 30 years, what our lives would tell is being part of a local church has formed us. Where, I mean, I know I'm a pastor, so I'm saying that now, but there are a long time that I was not a pastor, but being part of a regular, ordinary church, of worshiping on a regular basis, and then letting that form our discussion, I honestly think that really is the main thing. Now, you can go to church and not fall in love with Jesus. I get that. Mm-hmm. But the opposite isn't true. So I think the other thing maybe for us, and at least you say if this is right. Maybe this is my personality or maybe me as a husband. If there is something between us that's not right, I can't live with that. Mm-hmm. In the sense of, I have to go to the Lord and just ask the Lord, what am I missing? Where am I wrong? And ask the Lord to help me to see that. So that usually turns into me confessing sin. And if you're confessing sin, repenting sin, and then granting forgiveness to someone else, you can't do that in your own strength. So the Lord is going to be with you. Or if I'm trying to manufacture an apology just because I don't want us to be mad at each other, Lisa's going to see through that because that's not, the Spirit's not doing that. Mm-hmm. That's just me. So how do we keep the Lord present? I mean, we do, but you know, Lisa and I kind of spend our time together. When we were younger, the word quiet time was used all the time, that phrase. And now I kind of think it's coming back again. But, you know, we don't do the same thing. We do it at the same time. Like, I've got kind of a prayer journal I write in a different way, and Lisa's got a Bible study that she does. So we kind of talk about it in the mornings, but I think it's more we begin our mornings together that way. Sometimes we pray together, but I mean, where we're audibly praying out loud together. Mm-hmm. That happens some, but it doesn't happen all the time. It's just that we are together in that moment.
Mm-hmm. I think one thing I would say that I know he's spending his time with the Lord as I'm spending with mine. I don't feel like I ever put pressure on him for what mm-hmm. he's doing, and he has never put pressure on me for what I'm doing. It's like, I understand you have your own vertical relationship with the Lord, and then anything that's an overflow out of it, we're very good to talk about what we've learned or what we're convicted of or mm-hmm. what we've been studying. Mine would be being a part of church, but being involved in, and I've done lots of different Bible studies, but I actually like reading the scripture and studying the scripture and then having application questions that then I can talk to him about that does its job of convicting of sin or just like that one question. But I've never felt him holding it over me. You have to do this to be a godly wife. And so therefore I felt the freedom to just grow my relationship with the Lord, because I know he's praying for me. Mm-hmm. So therefore, whatever the Lord brings into my life that I'm studying or learning, I feel like we kind of grow in that. And that's been, and it honestly, just how we're wired. The morning we both get up early, and it's just when it works for us to do it. And then that's oftentimes when we'll share something hard that we're dealing with or something that is on our mind or something like that. Yeah. But yeah. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, that's beautiful. But, what about being a student of your spouse? What are some ways you can grow in that? What are some good questions that you can ask your spouse, you know, to get to know them better?
Yeah. Can you go first?
Well, I was going to say, Anne, I think you said it correctly when you said marriage is about sanctification, like 100%. It's the Lord is using that other person in your life to sanctify you, to draw you closer to himself. And I feel like whatever it is going on in our relationship, it's the questions that the Lord puts on his heart, or a lot of these books or these resources that have given us things to go on. I don't know, being a student, I do know that as our marriage has evolved and changed with children and where the children are, whether they are really, really young and we're sleep deprived, or we're gunning and going and have different games and activities and whatever, to now where we're like empty nesters, carving out time for us to communicate one-on-one and still be on the same page has been a huge key. And I remember when all the kids were here, but they were of listening age and wanted to know everything that was going on, we would have to go on walks in the neighborhood by ourselves, just the two of us, that we could have a conversation without having listening ears and feel like we had the freedom. So yes, still date, but like kind of a check all the time without knowing, because there might be kid issues we need to talk about or work issues, but we didn't want other people listening. So walking and talking was a big one for a good chunk of time.
It is. It's like every marriage is in a different season. So the biggest theme of our life in the last year is we are now in a new season on a lot of different levels. We're now empty nesters. Our youngest has graduated high school and moved on. He still lives here now, but he has a job, and the dynamic of our house is different. We're grandparents now. That's new. I'm the senior pastor of the church. That's new.
And we're old.
And I mean, it's, we're celebrating 30 years, so it's different. I think the threat or the danger in a marriage is what we would say, we don't want to just become roommates. And that, I think that's the trajectory of most marriages. So I think, and that is not what the Lord has for us. I think of that passage, I think it's 1 Corinthians, might be 2 Corinthians, where Paul is telling the church that I've already betrothed you to one spouse. Meaning when you get married, you are already married. So your earthly marriage is a reflection of, it is to help you fall more in love with the gospel marriage, the marriage that you have with Christ. So if we are bored with each other and we aren't falling more in love with each other, I think there's a direct connection to our spiritual lives. And if we're falling more in love with the gospel, because if the two are just going to be connected, if the Lord is infinitely interesting, and he is, and he's creative, then, and we're made in his image and we're redeemed, then it's going to be a self-righteous moment or a lazy moment that I'm not going to find Lisa interesting. It's usually my own sin and my own self-righteousness that that I won't. So that being said, what are some good questions? I don't know. You just have to pray and ask the Lord to give them to you. For all men, the worst thing I could do for a man is to say, here, ask this question. Because what a man will do is he'll ask the same question for the rest of his life every single day. Like, that's the question. Why do I need a new question? And I quickly learned a long time ago, that's not how women are wired. If Lisa knew I just had one formulaic question, that's not going to go so well. But so I think for men, it's the Lord who is the creator can give us creativity to ask good open questions of at the moment. Like, I know on a day that Lisa has worked and she's tired, she will want to talk about her day. And if I love my wife, I will ask her about her day.
That's good. Okay, last question. The differences between male and female, and just that dynamic. Mark, I always remember the story of you and Nate going to play golf. And I just think it just resonates.
So Nate is the man that introduced Lisa and me, and now he and I work together. He directs the missions of our church, but he and his wife are really just masters of counseling young couples and teaching, coaching, that sort of thing. Well, this is back before he had kids or I had kids, and we would play golf fairly often. But there was one day that we had gone to play golf. We played 18 holes. We spent
a lot of time, I'd say
6 hours together, driving there, playing golf, eating lunch, driving home. And Nate's wife, Cynthia, could not wait to find out what all we had talked about that day. And the answer was, we talked about golf. It never crossed their mind to talk about anything other than golf. So Lisa and Cynthia both were like, so they didn't talk about anything. They said they just talked about golf. And Nate and I both were confused. Like, what did you think we were talking about? We were playing golf. So, like, should we use a 7-iron or an 8-iron? That's what we talked about.
That's a true story.
So Lisa and Cynthia have always found that strange, that when we were playing golf, we talked about golf. Yeah. And for us, it makes perfect sense.
I think that's such a brilliant example. And it is so true that something so that can seem so obvious to one half of a marriage is not obvious to the other. And I guess that's part of that learning process, getting to know one another and supporting one another in all those different little ways through all the different seasons of life. Time has gone by so quickly. I think that is the quickest recording session we have ever had. But Mark and Lisa, it's just been so wonderful to hear from you. For me and Anne to meet you and I know for Andy to see you again. And we're so grateful for your honesty and openness and in sharing about marriage, about the joys and sorrows, the blessings and challenges that it can bring. And I think as we bring the discussion to a close, I do want to say to all our listeners, and I know that everybody on this episode, I think, will share this with me, that we recognize that for some of you listening, you will be on that journey of marriage, and you will be relating to the joys and sorrows that it brings, and the fact that it's an amazing blessing and such an amazing thing to be part of. We know that there'll also be other listeners for whom the journey of their marriage hasn't worked out the way that they wanted it to. And that's something that we just recognize. And we know that that's a very, very hard journey for anyone to have to go through. And we also know that there are some people who'll be listening who'll be longing for the day of their marriage, and it hasn't come yet. And we just want to reassure you of how deeply you are loved by Jesus. And whatever your circumstances in terms of your relationship, it's known by him, you're held by him and loved by him today and forever. We are sponsored by Christian Focus, and this week it's the turn of Andy to give us a recommendation. So Andy, tell us more.
I have a wonderful book. Tim Chester, who's the senior faculty member of Crosslands Training here in the UK, has put together this book called Meeting Christ in the Garden. Now, Thomas, Mark, have you guys ever preached through Songs of Songs?
Wow.
I've done one sermon.
I have done some individual lessons in a Bible study, but not from the pulpit.
Wow. Well, if you want some help, Tim Chester has put together this. It's really a collection of some of the finest preachers from the history of the church, from Spurgeon and others, and it's gone through nearly every verse in Songs of Songs, and it's honestly wonderful. As we've been chatting about marriage is the greatest picture of Christ in the church, and this book paints in our imaginations, as it says in the back, a physical place wherein we may spend time with Christ and enjoy his love. And I've just dipped in and out of it. I've actually not read it through, but there's a Spurgeon sermon early on, and I mean, it is just terrific. So as a devotional, I don't think anything could be richer for your spiritual life, and perhaps as a book to read together as a couple. As Mark well reminded us, we are betrothed to Christ first and foremost, and our marriage is a pointer and an image of that relationship. So a devotional of classic writings on Songs of Songs, by Tim Chester. Christian Focus have published it, out and out. Buy it. Highly recommend it. Well, thank you to all our listeners. Thank you so much, Mark and Lisa, once again. Really, really enjoyed having you on, and look forward, God willing, to seeing you in the not too distant future. All right.
Thank you all
for
having us.
Thank you all so much. It's been great.